Voters turned out to make their voices heard in yesterday's primary election, and the results, two very different gubernatorial nominees and some surprise legislative upsets. For the next hour, we will be breaking down election results as we talk about the winners, the losers, the upsets, and the history making. Joining me to talk about all of this is Melissa Davlin, Idaho Public Television reporter, Steve Udick, BSU Assistant Political Science Professor, Jasper LaCalzi, Political Economy Professor at the College of Idaho, and joining us by phone, Kevin Richard, Idaho Education News Reporter. I want to welcome all of you to the show today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, Kevin. And I know a lot of you had a late, late night last night, so let's get right into this as your, hopefully, brains are still fresh. Gubernatorial race. Winners on the Republican side, Lieutenant Governor Brad Little, Paulette Jordan for the Democrats. And when we saw that last night, surprising, not surprising, Melissa?
Not surprising that Brad Little won. What I was surprised at, though, was I thought it would be closer, honestly. I thought that Labrador and Ahlquist would get more votes across the board. What we saw statewide, though, was Labrador did well in North Idaho, which we expected. Tommy Ahlquist did really well in Eastern Idaho, which we expected. But Little did really great in the rest of the state. And the more rural the county, the better he did, which really shows that the Little Otter team knows rural Idaho. And just as importantly, rural Idaho knows these guys who have been there the last 12 years doing Capital for a Days and working with these ranching and farming communities. I did expect more votes for Ahlquist. I will say that I'm surprised. I thought that Little wouldn't have won by the amount that he did.
And won by the amount he did in Ada County as well?
You know, I am not sure that Little did fine in Ada County, right? You know, he got 39.1% of the vote. He lives in downtown Boise during the session. He's been lieutenant governor and a state senator before that. So people know him really, really well. Tommy Ahlquist only got 25%. So I'm not surprised that Little did well, but I am surprised that Ahlquist didn't do better in Ada County. He only got 25%, and he has been running hard.
And running hard in this area, it seems to me. I mean, you can't turn a corner without seeing an Ahlquist sign somewhere. Jasper, but what would you say about that?
I think he peaked too early. I think you have to start early, but I think if the election was 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, he would have done better. I think people got a little tired of him, and he came out, oh, here's a new fresh face and stuff, and then he starts having some of his ads are pretty negative and such, and that dials him down. I think that made him a little and I think people turned to Little at the end. Let's go with the person we know. Let's go with, you know, Butch
kind of
Otter 2.0.
True.
You know, it's Butch Otter 2.0. Mm-hmm. And in the end, everyone's, oh, well, in the past, well, this is a time Otter loses, and he never does. And I think this is just another term for Butch Otter.
And not just, you know, coming out strong in the beginning and then people getting tired of him, but I also think that his debate performance played into it. There were a lot of issues which Ahlquist was a little bit squishy on, to be frank, you know, not just in the Idaho Public Television debate that we hosted, but also on KTVB. It was harder to pin him down on specific policy issues as opposed to Little and Labrador, especially when it came to abortion-related issues, you know, things like faith healing. And so I still maintain that voters would prefer somebody that they don't fully agree with as opposed to somebody that they don't know where.
If they agree with them or
exactly.
not.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I want to bring Kevin and Steve into the conversation now. Let's talk a little bit about Paulette Jordan's win last night. Kevin, I know just, I believe it was just last week, you said you wouldn't be surprised by Paulette Jordan winning. So your prediction came true.
I wasn't surprised. I mean, the margin was surprising, I think. But I think you could see this path forward for Paulette Jordan. It's like we talked about last week. The demographics of the Democratic Party are changing, and they're changing before our eyes. The only question I had going into Tuesday night was, is this the election cycle where we really see that, where we really see this younger, more energized block of Democratic voters sway a major and a very closely contested statewide election, and indeed that was the case. That's what we saw. You know, I'm struck too, to kind of put a bow around both of these races, about how different the path to victory were on Tuesday night. I mean, you know, Brad Little ran a very workmanlike, very deliberate, very incremental campaign. He was the first person in the race. He's been raising money for almost 2 years. Melissa mentioned Capital for a day. It's all of that sort of retail level, gradual winning approach to politics that is very consistent with Brad Little's personality. Paula Jordan's race, a lot more of an insurgent race. She came from seemingly out of nowhere over the course of just a few months. Got a lot of national media attention, got a lot of national endorsements. Very different style to a winning campaign on Tuesday.
And at 12:30, we are going to be talking more about what Paulette Jordan's win means for the Democratic Party and how they move forward. So for our listeners, do know that we will be delving into that a bit more. Steve, you were on the show yesterday talking about trends. What did you see with last night's election?
I saw a big thing with the Democratic primary is it followed a lot of trends that were happening in other states as well, right? You see in a state, especially in Pennsylvania, a lot of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party had a lot of success in primaries. And that's very similar to what Paulette Jordan did. And I think Paulette Jordan was really helped out by a lot of enthusiastic voters. And those voters from the progressive wing of the Democratic Party have tended to be pretty enthusiastic. We saw it here in Idaho and especially in Ada County at the Democratic caucuses where people waited for hours and hours and hours in 2016 to vote for Bernie Sanders, right, when he won overwhelmingly. And I think that kind of support from the Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party and his apparatus for supporting candidates really helped Paulette Jordan, and it's helped a lot of other candidates, especially in primary elections where voters do tend to be more liberal than the general election in the Democratic primaries.
I'm speaking with Melissa Davlin with Idaho Public Television, Kevin Richert with Idaho Education News, Jasper Lacalzi with the College of Idaho, and Steve Udick with Boise State University. If you have questions for our panel, email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. We will, of course, come back to the gubernatorial race, but I want to move on now, talk about the lieutenant governor race. Two women getting the nominations. And
once that's about all they have in common.
But still, historic in the sense that we will, in the state of Idaho, come November, have a woman in one of the highest elected offices in the state. We've never seen something like that. But Melissa, you were talking about kind of the you had Janice McKeon.
Janice McKeon,
thank you, in your top two.
Yeah, I did.
And tell me why.
For a couple of reasons. First of all, she has been campaigning really, really hard. You know, her signs are all around the state, and certainly you see that with the other candidates. They've all been campaigning hard. But the difference with Janice McKeon is she has made herself almost into a brand. Her face is on a lot of the signs, which is pretty relatable for a lot of voters. Also, in a down ticket primary in a year where the governor race is sucking up all of the air in the room, and more importantly, all of the press and all the money that would normally go for an open seat in one of these races. You have three candidates in Steve Yates, Marv Hagedorn, and Kelly Packer who were pretty indistinguishable when it came to the actual issues themselves. Bob Nonini a little bit further to the right, and also from North Idaho. That set him apart just a little bit, but not a whole lot. And then you had Janice McKeon, who fully embraced this Liberty Caucus, Freedom Foundation.
And
that's where she got the vote. If you look at the breakdown, it was very close between Janice McKeon and Steve Yates. You know, throughout the night it was neck and neck, and for some parts of the night it was less than 100 votes split, which is pretty significant in a statewide race. Both Eastern Idaho candidates, but Janice McKeon once again really embraced that Freedom Foundation message, and that gave her the edge. Had it not been for such a crowded race with the other four candidates,
I think she may have gotten more votes.
No, I think that she would have lost.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. I think that this was a combination of a crowded race and Janice McKeon doing something to set herself apart.
Now, Kristen McCollum on the Democratic side, she has aligned herself with Paulette Jordan. Do you think that helped her get that nomination? Jasper, what would you say about that?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think she had as much competition either. And she's She's like the perfect Idaho Democrat to run. She's a former Army officer. She works for HP. She does all that kind of stuff. I think she'll give a nice balance to Paulette Jordan also, because Paulette, you know, she's often seen as much more liberal and such. And I think that Cullum would pull her back a little bit. But
but what people have to understand here in the state of Idaho is even though they're running on a ticket,
that doesn't mean anything.
Further in the past, there's been splits back in the 60s and such like that, which really caused a problem because whenever the governor is out of the state, the lieutenant governor takes over. So you had an issue when we had a senator die and the governor couldn't go to the funeral because he was afraid what the Democratic lieutenant governor was going to do with Bob Smiley.
Butch Otter and Cecil Andrus. It wasn't that long ago where we had a Democratic governor and a Republican lieutenant governor. I'll also point out that Jim Fabe didn't really campaign. So Kristen Cullum didn't have much of a competition. It was pretty much a given that she was going to win.
Two supporting members of the Idaho Freedom Caucus lost their seats in the state legislature. Two other longtime incumbent lawmakers were ousted as well during yesterday's primary election in Idaho, and two others. Far-right state representative Ron Nate, a Rexburg Republican, lost his seat. Five-term representative Jeff Thompson, a Republican from Idaho Falls, lost. Seven-term representative Tom Lurcher, who is also chairman of the House State Affairs Committee, lost his seat last night. First-term Senator Tony Potts, an Idaho Falls Republican, lost. And Julie Van Orton lost her seat last night. All of this fairly surprising, to say the least. Let's bring in our guests again, Melissa Davlin with Idaho Public Television, Jasper Lacouze, political economy professor at College of Idaho, Steve Udick, an assistant political science professor at Boise State, and Kevin Richard with Idaho Ed News is on the phone with us. Kevin, I want to start with you and about Julie Van Orton losing her seat. What does this mean for education in Idaho?
Well, it means even more turmoil in terms of committee chairs at the legislature, by my count. I mean, so you had two important House committee chairpersons lose on Tuesday. Van Orden, who'd been chair of the Education Committee, and maybe a surprise because the race hinged on a sex education bill that Julie Van Orden presented in her committee. It didn't get out of her committee, but her opponent made that the centerpiece of a successful challenge. So she's out. Tom Lurcher, the longtime chair of the House State Affairs Committee, is out. So by my count, when you factor in the retirements, you have six House committee chairs that are going to be up for grabs in that organizational session in December, and two very important Senate chairs are going to be up for grabs, both the chairs for JFAC on the Senate and House side.
And what,
there's going to be huge turnover, and there's going to be a lot of jockeying, and that jockeying is probably going to be occurring behind the scenes starting right about now.
Now, I was going to say today they will be talking about it.
I think people are working the phones. Anybody who is interested in being House Education Chair is probably watching this, or House State Affairs. Those were the surprises. I mean, we knew JFAC was going to turn, but now we've got a whole lot of other really important committee chairs, and committee chairs have huge influence over the flow of legislation. You know, they can stop a bill, they can push a bill, they can do an awful lot.
And let's remember, then we have a new governor as well coming in when all of this turnover is going on.
Oh yeah, that too.
So that too. Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you'd notice.
Yeah, but Melissa, So there was this push. I mean, it was the Idaho Freedom Caucus and these supporters losing their seat. How much did that play into it? Because aren't their opponents a little bit more to the right?
They're freedomer.
I don't think last night was a referendum on the House Liberty Caucus because for every Liberty Caucus member who lost their seat, and I'm thinking Ron Nate, Carrie Hanks, Tony Potts, there were a lot of others who kept theirs. Mm-hmm. You know, Christy Zito.
Julie Van Orden lost a challenge to the right. So that seat moves to the right.
Right,
so it is a mixed bag. Melissa's right about that.
That's exactly it. You know, on the other side of the state, there was an open seat that was left by Christy Perry. Mm-hmm. That was taken by that was won in a very crowded primary by a liberty-leaning lawmaker.
So why do you think
Heather Scott, just across the board, Priscilla Giddings, so many Freedom Caucus members or Liberty Caucus members kept their seats. And so I think that a lot of these issues were very specific to the lawmakers and also the legislative districts.
Because most of this came out of East Idaho.
So every single lawmaker who lost their seats last night, every single incumbent who lost was from eastern Idaho, which is fascinating to me. Now, there were a lot of close challenges all around the state, but the only ones who lost were in eastern Idaho. You couple that with retirements, lawmakers who were stepping down, Kelly Packer, Del Rabel, Jeff Sitaway, very influential lawmakers. There is so much turnover in east Idaho, and that's going to have I would think a bigger impact maybe even than the governor, because the governor can say anything he or she wants as far as legislation or policy that they want passed. But outside of the relatively narrow scope of executive orders, all of that relies on their relationship with the legislature. And as we've seen with Butch Otter, who has had varying levels of success.
Ups and downs.
Right. I mean, he came in his first term really pushing this transportation package that went nowhere. And he spent 12 years trying to make any ground with that, and the legislature wasn't on board. So not only is there going to be jockeying for these important chairmanships, but this could have big consequences on who's going to be the next House Speaker, and that's going to cause turmoil in those chairmanships too.
And what does that mean then for the average Idahoan who is sitting here the day after the election saying, "Well, these were in East Idaho." Yeah. How does that ultimately, affect me as just a citizen, Jasper?
See, I think most of the power is in the chairs, and what you're seeing is the chairs changing. And I think there's been a slow movement, but been very slow. Power in the Idaho legislature has been Magic Valley in eastern Idaho forever. And even though population's gone down, I think you might finally start to see more of the power going to the Treasure Valley here. So people in the Treasure Valley are thinking, well, what do I care about the eastern Idaho? Well, all those guys are going. Now you start getting more seniority of people in the Treasure Valley, so you might actually start to see more leadership in the Treasure Valley and not, it's usually Magic Valley
is the speaker,
everybody's from there. Now, maybe, because you got over a third of the population in the Treasure Valley, but very little leadership. So I really think that's where you could see a change.
But also North Idaho.
North Idaho has more senior lawmakers
now, and North Idaho has in recent years been lacking in leadership. The exception now is Steve Vick in the Senate. Mm-hmm. He's from North Idaho. But with Bob Nonini losing his lieutenant governor race, I think a lot of North Idaho lawmakers are really going to be eyeing those chairmanships.
So we could, that's a very interesting point, though, that all of a sudden seeing more potential leadership coming out of areas that we haven't seen it in Idaho. And that could make a change.
In Canyon County, where I'm at, I mean, it is Republican as any place in the whole country, yet there's very few leaders come out of there, and you would think there are longtime people in there, and maybe that'll change some too.
And Kevin, I want to talk with you about the superintendent race, superintendent public education, Sherry Ybarra, keeping her seat, but she will now be challenged by Cindy Wilson. Tell us a little bit about that and what that means moving forward come November.
Well, I think this was the matchup that we kind of expected to see in November. I mean, this had the feel of kind of a play-in round. Sherry Ybarra had probably her easiest election night Tuesday night. She was not seriously challenged in the end in this race, and I think Jeff Dillon, her Republican opponent, never really seemed to get a lot of traction, never seemed to figure out how to juggle running for statewide office with running a school district. So I think it's a very interesting race moving forward. I think Ybarra is probably going to be a more savvy campaigner than she was when she seemed to win in spite of herself in 2014. Cindy Wilson, I think, is going to be a fairly formidable campaigner. She's had 30 years of experience in the schools. She retired from teaching today. We just had that story this morning. She's going to retire to focus on running her election into the fall. But she has experience on Governor Otter's K-12 task force. She sits on the governor's board of correction. It's going to be hard to pigeonhole her as a hardline partisan. And I think she's going to run an aggressive campaign. And you look back at the history, this is the one statewide race the Democrats have, the last one they won. You have to go back to 2002, but it's the last one they won.
Democrats have run competitive races in 06 and 2014. I think this is going to be a very competitive race.
Do you think then that there's truly a chance that Ibarra could lose her seat come November?
I think there's absolutely a chance because this tends to be a pretty competitive race. Idaho voters seem to be, historically, they seem to be a little bit more sympathetic and a little bit more open to the idea of voting for a Democrat in that seat. So I think Cindy Wilson has a pretty good shot at peeling off independent votes, maybe even some Republican votes. And I think her classroom experience is going to be attractive to a lot of voters. I think it's a wide open race, even though you have an incumbent. I think this is an open race in a sense. I think it gives the Democrats probably still their best opportunity of breaking through and winning a statewide race this year.
Let's talk about 1st Congressional District. Russ Fulcher taking that Republican nomination. I think earlier off mic we were talking, no one really surprised by that win, but surprised by how much he won by. Melissa, can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. This, once again, wide open race, and we've seen very, very close races in that 1st Congressional District before, especially when there is an open seat. I think we've known for a while that Russ Fulcher was the one to beat based on how aggressively he was campaigning, how early he announced, and how much money he's raised. But you have so many other candidates who appeal to good chunks of Congressional District 1, Luke Malik from North Idaho, Christy Perry from very conservative Canyon County.
The girl with the guns, as she
campaigned with. The only woman in the race, and as we've seen, that does make a difference in a lot of these cases. David Leroy, well-known. Michael Snyder, firebrand, very far-right conservative, the pro-Trump guy. So all of that said, I really did expect it to be the votes to be more evenly spread. I really, really did. But Russ Fulcher got 43% of the vote. The next closest candidate,
David Leroy,
got 15.5%. That is a huge spread right there. And then everybody else was scattered between, the other three who were major contenders, between 10% and 14%. That's wild to me.
And Steve, what does that say then about? This district then, goes from Boise to North Idaho. So, you have a different type of population from south to north.
Yeah, it's a big geographic district. There are a lot of different people in it. I think it says that Russ Fulcher, my kind of thoughts is he has name recognition. He has that kind of experience that people are looking for. And he's someone that I think for a lot of the voters in that district, they were pretty comfortable with. And I think that's what helped. And, to get 43% of the vote in such a large race with so many candidates getting above that 10% threshold. And as I'm sure people have seen around town, all of the signs for Congressional District 1, that these candidates do have some money that he's running against, and he still was able to win by such an overwhelming margin. It's kind of a really strong endorsement for him from the voters.
History was made last night in Idaho. For the first time, a woman got the Democratic gubernatorial nomination. If Paulette Jordan wins in November, not only would she be the first female governor in Idaho, she would be the first Native American governor in the United States. And another first, we will see a female lieutenant governor come November. First, before we move on with our guests, let's hear from both gubernatorial candidates now, Lieutenant Governor Brad Little getting the Republican nomination and Paulette Jordan getting the Democratic nomination.
I submit we should do what we've always done, and that's continue to take surpluses and give part of it back to the hardworking Idahoans that contribute to those surpluses and put money away for a rainy day fund, because we will not always be the leading state in the nation, and we need to prepare just like we did the last time. Just like our ancestors, just like the people that were in this room for the last 30 years, the Republicans that have been elected that have done the right thing, we have to perpetuate that. That's where we are.
I want to make sure that not only are we defending our public lands and our environment and all of its wildlife, but that we are fighting for the public education that they deserve. And I don't say this as another tagline. I actually mean it. Because my heart breaks when I see that our kids don't have access to the best public education that we should be providing for them.
Yes.
We are cheating our people. We are leaving our future out.
That was Paula Jordan, Democratic gubernatorial candidate, and Brad Little, Republican gubernatorial candidate, during their victory speeches last night. My guest today, Steve Udick with Boise State University, Melissa Davlin with Idaho Public Television, Jasper LaCalzi with the College of Idaho, and Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News. We continue to hear history was made, history was made. But let's talk about what this really means and dig down into how this affects the Democratic Party in Idaho. And Kevin, I know you were talking about this a little bit earlier, I believe last week when you were on the program. Can you talk a little bit about that, in the sense that there seems to be maybe some fractures in the party?
You know, there definitely are. And I think it was very evident, especially on social media, not so much between Paulette Jordan and A.J. Belukov, but between their supporters. You know, it was not lost, I think, on a lot of people that Paulette Jordan had her campaign victory celebration down the block from the traditional Democratic Party celebration. And, you know, Emily Post does not weigh in on election night etiquette, but I think that kind of underscores something that is going to be a big challenge for Paulette Jordan. She's going to have to try to figure out how to bring establishment Democrats into her campaign while keeping the energy and keeping the base from her base. I mean, that's going to be a really difficult task. And I think a Democratic nominee is going to have like zero margin for error to win that governor's race to begin with. And I think the margin for error is maybe even smaller against a little bit more of a centrist, stay the course kind of a candidate in Brad Little. This is a really tough race for Democrats to win, and probably a little bit tougher just because they're running against Brad Little as opposed to more of a hardliner like a Raul Labrador. So Paulette Jordan's got a big job ahead of her, and it probably starts today in terms of trying to get some of the folks who endorsed A.J. Belukov to come around to her campaign, and to not just come around to it and grudgingly accept it, but to actively work on her behalf.
And Kevin,
it's an uphill challenge.
And Kevin, to your point, Idaho Republican Party State Chairman Jonathan Parker last night said that there could be a real challenge of running against Democrat Paulette Jordan. We want to hear from him really quickly.
We're not at the Idaho Republican Party, and with our nominees, we're not going to take anything for granted. We are going to unite as a party. We're going to support them, but we're not taking anything for granted. We're going to put together, and we've already put together a great team and staff, but we're going to raise the money necessary. We're going to put together the operations to ensure that complacency doesn't take root in the Idaho Republican Party.
And it's interesting that he uses the word, you know, come together. We're not going to fracture, because we're seeing that a little bit in the Democratic Party when with the whole email that went out and Paulette Jordan, you know, the headline saying that it came from the Democratic Party, then a retraction. And then all of a sudden, you know, Democrats endorsing A.J. Belukov, but the party itself saying we don't endorse until after the election. Steve, what does that mean when it comes down to the Democratic Party?
This is kind of a consistent battle within parties and politics, right, of where the party's going and where they're planning to move forward, right? And I think we're seeing kind of in Idaho and nationally among Democrats this desire for these more liberal kind of, you know, less maybe moderate, less like kind of the pragmatist type of more ideological candidates. We saw something similar in, you know, 2008, 2010 in the Republican Party, though, right? We saw those same fights happening of this idea of, do you want to get the more pragmatic centrist or do you want the more ideological kind of those further to the right candidates and Republicans? And the Democratic Party is having the same thing, and I think we're seeing it play out here with a lot of the, you know, a lot of the support, mm-hmm. as I kind of mentioned when I was on here yesterday. Paulette Jordan is coming from outside of the state. It's coming from these people who aren't in Idaho, and a lot of Belukov support was coming from Idaho. So you kind of see that mix there, and it's a challenge.
So then why Paulette? How did she win the nomination last night, Melissa?
You know, it stands out to me. A lot of people have said that they're not necessarily surprised that Paulette won, but they're surprised by the margin. This is something that I think we at Idaho Reports, I don't want to brag, but
go ahead,
but
and brag.
But we saw this coming because we covered this wasn't just about Paulette Jordan. This was an energy that she was able to capitalize on that started in 2016 with the Democratic Presidential Caucus. Remember how handily Bernie Sanders won the Democratic Presidential Caucus in Idaho. And when you compare Paulette Jordan supporters with Bernie Sanders supporters, that Venn diagram isn't a perfect circle, but it's pretty darn close. And so these are young, energized Democrats who are motivated to come out. And going back to the question about what this means for the Democratic Party, this A.J. Belukov, Paulette Jordan fight, and even the fight in November isn't necessarily about who's going to be the next governor. It's about the future of the Idaho Democratic Party. And it has big implications for those down-ticket races, especially in close legislative districts like District 5, District 6, if Medicaid expansion ends up on the ballot. The superintendent's race, this is going to get Democrats, excited Democrats, and people who are new to the party out to the polls. More so maybe than A.J. Belukov. There is so much excitement on the ground for Paulette Jordan. Is it enough to get her to the governor's office? That's going to be a very, very difficult needle to thread. Right. I think the Republican Party, though, is smart not to take this for granted. Once again, not necessarily for the governor's office, but for every single other legislative race and the state superintendent's race, where there are going to be really tough challenges in some places.
And Kevin, what do you say about that, especially with the superintendent race?
Well, I think that's definitely true. I mean, I think what happens in this governor's race will affect down ticket. The other thing I'm curious to watch now with Paulette Jordan in the months ahead, it's kind of a two-edged sword. I mean, the fact that she is something of a national brand right now is going to bring some national dollars into her campaign and bring some national attention. We've seen national media attention. I mean, CNN, on down the list.
But the New York Times was covering
the race last night. But I think that storyline that has kind of been established is that Paulette Jordan is running this anti-establishment campaign, running despite maybe admonishment from the Democratic Party to wait her turn or give Belukov another shot at this. And I think every time that story comes out, it's got to be a little bit of a jab. It's got to hurt some establishment Democrats who read that over and over. Mm-hmm. Again, it's the unification of the party, and it's capitalizing on her ability to raise money nationally and take advantage of her national profile that's emerging, while at the same time running an Idaho campaign that appeals to Idaho voters.
And Jasper, you talked a little bit about that earlier, and about the fact that That whole idea that she wasn't at Democratic headquarters. I know, Kevin, you said that, but she's across the street. Jasper, what does that say?
Well, she does that for her supporters, too, that they don't want to be in the ballrooms drinking white wine and Grey Goose. They're having shots across the street, and they're chanting her name, and they're having a great time.
And she's coming out in a limo.
Time. Yeah, that I don't know where that came from. But she's kind of almost like a vessel that people just poured in whatever they wanted. That's who they saw with her. Well, I find interesting how I think how Republicans are going to react somewhat is, you know, been here a long time, but 1994, you had Larry Echohawk, who was going to be the first Native American governor until Phil Batt. And I remember the big billboard downtown Boise with Larry Echohawk jogging with Bill Clinton. And that's what I think they'll try to do with her, too. She's going to be – they're going to tire of Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton and all that kind of stuff, too. So I think that might actually rile up some of her supporters even more. But that's how the Republicans win this, is she's Nancy Pelosi.
Steve, what does this mean then with national? And what I mean by that is the money that she could see coming into her campaign.
Yeah, so with money, I think we've kind of already seen it with Paulette Jordan's campaign. And she's raising a lot of money, right? And a lot of money means she has to spend that money. And she's going to spend it on advertising. And she's going to try to run a competitive race here. And she's going to spend her money and she's going to advertise. And I think she's going to go hard. And she's going to try to win. And Mills had mentioned the effects on down ballot races. And I think especially with the Medicaid expansion, if that ends up on the ballot, that's something that you actually could see some real changes in, with, I imagine, nearly all of Paulette Jordan's supporters are going to support voting yes on Medicaid expansion. And more votes she gets, the more and more likely that becomes something that could eventually pass. So I think there are kind of competing things that could happen here.
And that's a tough issue for Little, I think, too. That's a tough issue for him to deal with, too, with Medicaid expansion.
There were some shakeups, some history-making firsts, and some decent voter turnout during Idaho's primary election yesterday. In fact, some polling locations ran out of ballots at one point. In Ada County, that happened, at least in two locations. Let's hear from Ada County Chief Deputy Clerk Phil McGrain about what happened with voter turnout.
We saw a significant increase early voting, both locally as well as statewide, particularly in the Democratic primary. It was up almost 100%, so a huge turnout. I think that's a reflection of that there's some big races at the top of the ticket, which wouldn't typically be the case at this time of year. But we are also seeing increased turnout in the Republican primary as well. So all that attention, the TV ads, the signs, everything seemed to be drawing some people out to vote.
And I want to check back in with my guest today, Melissa Davlin with Idaho Public Television, Jasper Lacalze, political economy professor at College of Idaho, Steve Udick, an assistant poli-sci professor at Boise State, and Kevin Richard with Idaho Ed News. And I do want to make a plug for Jasper. He has a new book coming out at the end of the year, Idaho Politics and Government, Culture Clash and Conflicting Values in the Gem State. And, of course, Jasper is a College of Idaho professor. So we will have you on later to talk about your book, Jasper. Getting back, though, to the polling locations and voter turnout, Melissa, you had said, I mean, we saw it in the Treasure Valley with running out of Democratic ballots. However, this was not an isolated incident just in Ada County.
No, this is something that happens statewide and in both parties. I think there was a lot of attention focused on the Democratic ballots. Mm-hmm. And to be clear, this is alarming whenever it happens. If you're a voter and you find out that you've been standing in line and you have to stand in line even longer because you need to get that ballot printed out and delivered.
And time is not on your side if it's
Absolutely.
Getting close to 8 p.m.
So this isn't to dismiss that at all, but this happens statewide and it's indicative of high turnouts, which we're seeing. You know, yesterday in the GOP gubernatorial primary alone, there were 194,000 votes cast. For governor, Democrat, 65,000.
And that was on the Republican
side.
That's
just
only
on the Republican side alone. So massive turnout. But as we see in every year, you know, whether it's a presidential election or a gubernatorial election, a lot of the people are turning out for those top of the ticket races, you know, just lieutenant governor, which on the ballot is right under the governor's.
The governor.
Right. There were 18,000 fewer votes for GOP lieutenant governor.
So we're just passing over that because we want to vote specifically for governor.
You want to vote for your guy.
We don't know anything about anybody else. That's why I always tell my students. I said that people are basically lazy and stupid. So when they look
Let's
at this, they don't even know what the lieutenant governor does. So they're not going to even vote for it.
I might have put it differently, but there is something
blunt.
There is something to be said for that. You know, a lot of people. The treasurer race was even more dismal. You know, I think only 164,000 people voted in that, so even fewer still than that lieutenant governor race. And these are all critically important positions.
And Steve, why are we seeing more voter turnout? I mean, this is a primary election, and normally you see low voter turnout.
Yeah, you usually do with and it still is lower than you would see in a general election, right? But you're seeing higher voter turnout compared to previous years. I think that owes to the competitiveness of the elections at the top of the ballot, right? As we kind of mentioned, people don't really know or care as much about the lower elections of the ballot. They might pick people based on whose signs they've seen or what names sound familiar to them. And we've seen this happen in other states too. But we're at the top of the ballot, we had two competitive races, right? Two serious competitive races, which encouraged both Democrats and Republicans to go vote. And there were real choices there, right? There were real choices about the future of Republican politics or future of Democratic politics in Idaho. And I think that compelled a higher turnout compared to the past.
And Jasper, what would you...
I think you'll see it more in November, too, because I think you have you'll have a lot of choice there, too. But I think you'll see more with some of the lower ballot stuff start to – they'll have 6 months to put it together. And So I think you'll the superintendent race, I think, will be pretty hot. I think the lieutenant governor, yes, they're both women, but that's, again, all they have in common. So I think they could go at it some. And then I think there's a real choice. I mean, the clips we just heard from Brad Little and Paulette Jordan, well, we can't spend much money. We got to save our money. We've got to be just what we always have. And so Brad Little's looking toward the back. We have to be, I mean, traditional conservative. Mm-hmm. Paulette Jordan, hey, we've got to look toward the future in education. So I think you get more people out when there's a clear choice and it's not just, well, two different people would just
same old in Idaho, usually.
Yeah, it's Democrats are the same as the Republicans.
And Kevin, how does that play in then to November and moving forward? And the reason I ask that is it seems historically in Idaho, at least the last decade or so, the primary election usually calls the race. Is that the case this year?
Well, I think it depends, and I think it always comes down to turnout. And I think we'll have big turnout in November. And generally, big turnout in a general election, because this is Idaho, a Republican state, big turnout tends to favor Republicans. But you've got some X factors here. It's 2 years into the Trump presidency. That's going to energize voters to the left. The Paulette Jordan campaign, if she holds it together and if she pulls it together, that could be an energizing force. You could have Medicaid expansion on the ballot. I think those are forces, all three, that would tend to help get Democrats, help them get the vote out. They got to get a lot of vote out. It's still a Republican state. It's still an uphill battle. I think we're going to have big turnout, especially in the context of a non-presidential year.
How much does it matter that we will likely see national attention continue in our gubernatorial race, at least? But come November, how much does all of that attention really matter, Steve?
Well, I think it depends. I think if you asked me 6 months before the Senate election in Alabama if a Democrat was going to win, I would say no way. And then that's what happened, right? So anything could happen, but I think it is kind of a difficult, narrow path for Paulette Jordan to win. With national attention, it might mean more money, more donations coming in, right? Getting a higher profile. It might help Paulette Jordan have a higher profile of running for office again in the future. And if demographics change enough in the state, and if there's, even an addition of an extra congressional seat, that would actually kind of make one of those seats at least more competitive for Democrats to have a chance to win. And she could kind of raise her profile as someone, if she does pretty well and beats expectations in November, as someone who could be kind of the leader of the Democratic Party in Idaho.
And Jasper, ultimately, does that go down to what you have said where, and I think all of you said this, but that it's not about winning the governor race. It is about looking at this Democratic Party a generation from now.
And it was going to change. It was just when. I mean, and this pushed things forward. If Belukov wins the primary, you've got 2-4 more years of the same.
He's a Republican in another state, if we're going to be honest.
But you have the same good old boys and good old girls from the North End who are writing their checks for $50 to the party, and which they've been doing for 20 years. Here you see now the kickstart has happened where you're going to get, again, more of the young people, more of the progressives, the Bernie people are going to come out. Still don't think there's enough of them, but the national attention would be interesting that actually, I think, hurts Jordan more. If it's more of an Idaho race, it's better for her. The more she's tied to national Democrats, the worse it is. Maybe Trump comes out to visit for Little.
You never know. Anything's possible. Melissa?
When you look at pivotal moments in the history of the Idaho Democratic Party, it would be, let's say, Cecil Andrus in 1966 mm-hmm. getting the Democratic nomination in a very, very close party decision after the candidate who was going to be on the general election died. This is a pivotal moment, and this is a very Idaho decision. I don't think national media attention is going to have that much of an effect overall. It certainly will energize some people, but ultimately this is an Idaho pivotal moment for the Democrats.
And we will continue to talk about this all the way until November. I want to thank my guests, Steve Udick with Boise State, Jasper Lacalzi, College of Idaho, Melissa Davlin with Idaho Public Television, and Kevin Richert, in sunny LA joining us with Idaho Education News. I'm Gemma Gaudet. You're listening to Idaho Matters, and we will, of course, see you back here tomorrow.